You ready? Okay. All right. Last week we got off on a little tangent, I think. But I was discussing it with David after the shiur. I think the one point I think that's I think the reason why the Rambam comes back in the end and says it's one Aliba boy over there in the beginning is not really for the idea of Rachman Aliba boy, but he won't. But the way he sets it up is he sets it up as it was. He either would gain or there'd be no gain, and if there'd be no gain, then at least he'd have the schar of having done the right thing, right? But what's his point in saying that? I think his point in saying that is, again, like we were trying to say the first time around, that he's laying down the premise of his work, and that is that sometimes somebody comes in and will take the position that there's a great travesty occurring, and I must step into the breach and stop the and change the situation. And that type of situation, that's really the cause. There's really no analysis of, well, I could succeed, and if I don't succeed, at least Rachman Alivoy. It's not like the type of thing where there's a chance that the urgency doesn't really let you make a cheshbon. The Rambam's point is that he was just looking at it. He wasn't stepping in like in an urgency. He was stepping in to be a benefactor. Not that there was some evil in the status quo, but he was coming in to facilitate, to make things easier. So therefore he said, well, maybe there's no point. Maybe it's not necessary. I can try to make it easier, but maybe it's not necessary. But again, the whole thrust of it is that the Rambam is not coming with a revolution. It's not coming. He wasn't looking out at Judaism and saying, this is all, everybody's on the wrong derech over here, and I've got to come in and save the Jewish world. Then he wouldn't make a cheshbon. I could make it a little better, and if I don't, then it would be, I have no choice. It'd be eis lasos, I have no choice. I have to do whatever I can. The guy steps into a battle for his life, or fighting for the protection of his something dear to him. He doesn't say, well, I might succeed, and if I don't, at least Rachman Limboy. I have no choice. I have to act. I don't have the luxury of a cheshbon. So again, the Rambam is trying to show that he's not coming in as a revolutionary. And if you look in his works and you see that he's and you read into his works, he's overthrowing a whole all the prior chachamim. He's overthrowing. Then you know you're reading it wrong, right? Okay. But anyway, now let's get back to where what we were up to. So he says that what? He says, right. So again, I'm not sure how much was on last week's on the tape, but he said that he spoke about Olam Haba because he felt people were neglecting it, and he didn't dwell on Tchias Mason because he felt it was something that people spent a lot of time on. You read Sajigon, Amunus Radeus, he's got a lot of stuff on. A lot of the details of Tzchias Meisim takes a lot of time working it out, right? How they come back, the whole thing.
If there's enough earth to go around to make everyone come back.
Right. He goes through all that. What if a person was eaten by a lion? How does he come back? He goes through all types of, right? He goes through all the questions, every point. So the Rambam felt it wasn't necessary for him to dwell on Tzchias Meisim. But not that he's overthrowing Tzchias Meisim. Okay. But anyway, so he's still explaining further over here, right, why he spent so much time on Olam Haba. Is that what he's talking about here? So he says, because V'omnam yichayev zeh kulo ma sheyala b'dimyon ha'amon. Right? That, in other words, that what? Yeah. So they spent a lot of time in Olam Haba because people thought that Olam Haba was a physical existence, right? So he wanted to explain that the Olam Haba is really the Olam HaNeshamos. And that's the schar, Shein schar lemaila himenu, right? Vatova Shein achare hatova, right? And there'll be no gufos in that world, because he says it would be levatola. To have, since Chazal say Olam Haba, there's no physical activity, it would be a waste to have a created physical goof that has kalim designed for physical needs and physical activities, and they're pointless. And the Rambam spends a lot of time in the Mora talking about ascribing futile acts to God as a great gnus. Okay, but now, huh?
Like I think that a number of these did.
No, it's even worse. Even worse. It's even worse. He's saying design something for no purpose. Okay. So he says, but why do people want to believe? Why do people have a hard time believing in Olam Haba, in the sense that the Rambam explains it? Right. That's what I'm trying to get up to now again. Right. Why do people have that problem? And like he says in the beginning of Chelek. There are five ideas of Olam Haba. You have physical wealth. Yeah, you get revenge. Yeah, different things over there. You with your family, but why do people have a hard time? Why do people gravitate towards those ideas, right? As opposed to, and why are they resistant to the idea of Olam Haba as the Olam HaNeshamos? Correct. It has something to do with gravity. Okay, they gravitate there because the Rambam says that they're attracted to matter. Nobody thinks it's funny. Okay. So, he says, Asher lo yaminu shiyesh mitzias chozak rak laguf, that people don't believe that there's a strong existence to anything other than the body. Uma she'eino guf, aval hu biguf, kam mikrim, Hugamki nimtza etzlom, aval ein chezkoso bametzias kechezkazagof. Strange expression. That something that's not a body. He doesn't mean a human body, just not a body, not a physical body, right? But even if it's in a guf, even if it's in a body, like accidents. So that also they consider existence, but not as strong. The existence is not as strong as the existence of a body. What does that mean? What does that mean exactly? What does he say over there in his footnote?
After the process, that it's not real.
That accidents are not as real. Accidents are also real, but not as real.
They're not tangible.
So what does he mean by accidents? Not clear. Like anger? I mean. Like color, people think color exists, but they
the
say since since they don't exist on their own, right? They only exist in other things, so they're not their existence is not as strong. They don't have an independent existence; it's not as strong. Okay, but then if you extrapolate further, so you say things that are not related to anybody. Anybody are not existent at all, right? It's like a scale: the body, things in the body, and then things that have nothing to do with body. Mash eino guf eino mikre beguf eino nimtza etzel hascholam masher heim below sofik yaf pisha bolu gufosem gemulei mecholav atike mishur mishdaim. Yeah, what, I don't know what it means by yaf pisha bolu gufosem. What does that have to do with anything? Even though their bodies are disintegrate. What is he over there?
Pasuk?
No, where were you? Oh, no, right before the Pasuk.
Oh, okay, fine.
That they are fools without a doubt.
Right, despite the horriness of their bodies. I don't know what that means.
That means coldness. The hoariness?
H-O-A-R.
It means like white, isn't it? Like frosty? Hoary frost? Yeah. I don't know what he's saying there.
He says Shabbat Gofam. Shabbat Gofam and Yizokim. Gamuli Nechala Vatikim.
Even though their bodies have disintegrated from oldness, from old age, I mean they themselves should realize that the physical is not so is not the true existence because they're experiencing the deterioration of their body.
I don't understand what's going on.
Okay.
But he's just saying there's nothing else though. I mean, why?
Not even this whole thing. He's focusing on, he's going into, he's trying to give a reason why people,
believe Olam
Haba is physical. Right? So he's saying the real reason why they believe that is because they don't really believe in non-physical existences.
Okay.
And if they want to exist after death,
then they have to,
then they have to, then they have to be physical.
Okay.
Right? That's the short, that's the short version. But Neze, he says, because of this problem, Yaminu Rubam Shashem Guf. Shim lo ye guf etzlam eino nimsa. And they even have this idea about God. Because they believe in God's existence, but they don't believe in non-physical. Hu yoshechozak b'mitzias mi'bal chomer. Vein roi lomar yoshechozak. So he says, but what is known by but by the ones who are truly chachamim and not just by the name chachamim, is clear to them with a proof that anything that is separated from the physical is stronger in existence than a physical thing. Vein roi lomer yoser chazak ovo metzias hanivdol hi hametzias haamitis. Not even proper to say it's more, it's stronger, but it's the true existence, he says. Mipnei shelo yasigehu echad me'ofnei hashinai. Because none of the ways of change reach it. Veheim asher is bor etzlam b'mofes shashem eino guf v'lo koach v'guf. And them, that it is clear to them with the proof that God is not a body or a force in the body. Umibnei zeh madregas mitzius o yisala b'tachlis achozeh. Therefore, God is the ultimate existence. V'chein kol nivra nivdal ritzoni lomar malochem v'aseichel hu b'mitziyus o'chazak me'od kayem yoser mikol guf. Things that are separate creations, meaning malochem and the seichel, that in its existence is very strong. It exists more than any guf. So that's why we believe, he says, that what? That the malachim are not bodies, and the bnei olam haba are separated souls, meaning intellects, or however you choose to translate that, sacholim, as we explained with proofs from the Torah in the work that's called the Moran Vilhum. Yeah. So what is this? So what is this idea? What is this idea that the people are resistant? Don't believe that something that's not physical exists. They only believe that the physical exists. What is he? Can we understand why that is? Can we understand that? And what that means? And then later he does say that what? And then he says, That's okay if they believe that malachim are physical. That doesn't bother them, as long as they believe God is not physical. So they have this problem, and they can't believe in the non-physical malachim. How do they believe in? How do they make that chiluk? Yeah. So what do you say over here? What kind of a problem is this that people are facing? What kind of a problem is it? What's the source of this problem?
I mean, it seems like the way you're describing it, that anyone who knows anything about anything is going to come to the conclusion that he came to that these things do exist and that there are truer existence. And he's saying that it's only someone who doesn't really know about these things at all in any real way, but just thinks they do.
When he's saying in general, he's saying there's a general outlook of people who are foolish that truer, that the more physical a thing is, the truer its existence is.
I mean, it sounds like something like an emotionally based opinion. Because to the emotions, it's certainly more compelling that that which you could feel or see is real.
Which emotion is that?
That was an emotion.
The only way
you can experience it.
You can experience it.
The only way you're going to come to the realization that any of these other things are real is through an exercise purely of the mind.
Okay.
You can't relate to it in the way you can relate to anything else in the world. It's purely conceptual, you know, perception. So people who are more grounded and experiential aren't going to be as comfortable with that. So they'd rather rely on that which they have more familiarity with.
So what's an example like... I mean, it is a funny thing. I mean, yeah. So, what would we say like today? We have some examples of this type of idea.
Science.
I mean, it's an interesting thing. Yeah, like you were asking me about the laws of nature. Were you asking me about?
I mean, there are definitely abstract, non-physical ideas that common people like value, like monetary value. You know, things that can't. Point to, or just, you know, people have a notion of.
But let's clarify. Is he talking? See, I don't think he's talking about ideas, right?
He's just saying that
he's talking about existences.
The laws of nature are not just ideas; they're the actual existences which cause things to happen.
Okay, let's have this is a fun conversation.
Have it every few years.
We have it every few years. What? You haven't heard in a while?
I mean, what
are you don't know my opinion of that thing, so you gather. Yeah.
I think the function of the five senses.
Right.
Like what they're there to do.
Right.
To determine, I mean, this could be what they were thinking, to determine things are real or if they exist or they don't. Right?
I mean, what God gave you eyes?
There's a function.
To see if things exist.
I imagine. To recognize existence.
Right. Or to gather information. Upon which to find out what really exists.
I mean, that's what they're doing. They're doing that.
Right. No, but the question is it like a starting point or is it the thing?
Right.
You know what I mean? You're
I said, but either way you go.
Right.
Right. I mean, either if it defines existence or it's a starting point.
Right.
You have to be using them.
Absolutely.
So therefore...
That's like Sajigan says. It says everything we know goes back to the senses. You got to start with the senses.
Right. So, what's left out of the senses, right, seemingly, is just the power of the mind without any of these things.
Right. The senses don't have the power of the mind. That's a separate faculty.
Right. So, therefore, if those are the things that define existence, without the power of the mind, then those things don't exist. Such as
no, but we don't. But see, but I'm not saying those things define existence. Those things are
recognize existence. Tools to recognize existence.
Those things are tools, what? Access to the outside world, right. They're access to the outside world.
Right, but and
the mind has to process them.
You think your mind is just an eternal thing that processes it. I mean, if you're processing something that you're not hearing, touching, feeling, or smelling,
right.
It's just fabricated.
You
don't have any sense of recognition from any other...
Right, I mean, just an idea that I think up in my mind
isn't real.
Doesn't necessarily mean it exists.
It's just real to you.
Right, doesn't mean it exists
out
there.
Not an objective, and that's probably what they were thinking.
Right.
But I don't understand. Couldn't you argue that if I feel something, it doesn't mean you're feeling it? If I see
something, well, let's start with the laws. Let's go back to the laws. So David is proposing...
Why aren't the laws in
the
answer?
Huh? Because my question is, what do these non-physical things mean? What does it mean, non-physical things? Right. So I said it's existences that the Rambam is talking about, and laws.
What's the difference between define that? What do you mean by existences?
Things.
And ideas?
That's what I'm saying. I'm saying and laws are not existences. Okay. And David begs to differ.
Well, what's an existence?
A malach is an existence.
That's easy.
Right. Mm-hmm. And now your turn. What's a law?
What's a thing? That's what's an existence.
I didn't make that, Chilak. I never made that distinction.
What are you saying?
Why do we have to talk about things?
You're saying the laws of nature are not existences, right?
Correct.
What are they?
Laws. Okay, what are they? That's that. Well, okay. I'm saying they're not existing. Are you saying then? What do we mean by a law of nature? What's a law of nature? So David says, what do you mean? The whole world runs by these laws of nature. They have to exist.
They're doing things.
Well, you can't break them.
So what's actually going on then?
I don't know.
Particular things interacting with each other. And
so my what the way I look at it, the way I see it is that it's not really that laws exist. That's true, but not in the way that we mean as a separate existence. Not like when we say the laws of nature are true and they exist. All we mean to say is that matter has certain properties, right? Matter has certain properties, right? And we can define how matter behaves. And we can define them since matter is universal and all matter will behave the same way. We can say there are laws to how the matter behaves. But they don't obey those laws. Obeying the laws would imply like they have to, there's an external thing that's making them do these things. It's just the way they are.
Yeah.
It's just the way matter is. But matter is not capricious, because the quality of matter is always is uniform and it never changes. The underlying quality. So all when we say that the laws are real, what we mean to say is that matter has properties that you don't perceive with your eyes, right? That's what we really mean to say. We say laws of nature are real. We mean to say that matter has certain properties that you can't necessarily perceive with your senses, but with your mind and observation, you can derive them. For instance, if we could just take the luxury of stepping back 100 years, we could say that matter attracts. Matter attracts matter. That's a property of matter that it attracts other matter. Right? Not that there's a law of gravity as much as matter, quality of the property of matter is that it attracts other matter. Law of gravity it's just a question of connotation, you know. It's not like matter doesn't do it because it has to obey the law of matter. Right?
Yeah.
It's because that's what matter. That's a property of matter. That's a property of matter.
It's intrinsic. You have other things though, which we create in real things, like goodwill.
Goodwill. I hope you don't mean to count in goodwill, because that vanishes very quickly.
That's what I was referring to.
Everybody knows that's not real. You just just look at what's going on with the mortgages. So.
Or the way our money's based today. That still works. Sort of. It's not based on gold anymore. It's based on
something
else.
Yeah.
I believe it's real.
I hope so. Otherwise, as long as everyone still believes it's real, our money is safe.
Don't break that down. Let's leave that point.
Okay. So he's talking about real. He's talking about real non-physical existences. That's what he's talking about. Non-physical existences. Not the laws of nature.
Right.
Not the laws of nature. Like a soul, right?
Is that limited to extraterrestrial, whatever you want to call it?
Metaphysical.
Stuff.
Yeah. See, it's an interesting thing. See, nowadays, it seems to me, in those days, in the days of the Rambam, the scientific community, it seems, was much more accepting of the idea of non-physical entities, non-physical existences.
Because they didn't know how to explain it.
Because they couldn't explain a lot of things, right? like the souls. That was a common, widely accepted, I don't think anybody disagreed.
The heavens.
They believed plants had souls, animals had souls, people had souls. Because the soul there was no explanation. How does the thing know how to grow? How does that work? You know? So there was some force.
Planetary motion was a whole thing.
But today the scientific community is the opposite.
They don't believe in non-physical.
They don't believe at all in the non-physical.
The only
want to see everything.
They want to see everything. Until you can show a guy a brain scan that's something's going on in his head, there's no idea of thinking.
Right.
I mean, that's like the opposition that Freud met, for instance. He had an idea of just these concepts in the psyche. I heard this guy say he was starting out in school, medical school, whatever it was, and he was interested in Freudian psychology, so he went to the lab. He says, "Can you show me where the ego is in the brain?" The guy laughed at him. It was like in the 30s, I mean, like the 40s, whatever. But that's like people are very skeptical about those types of things. You know, they don't like that idea. Because it's hard to prove.
I mean, we like proofs now.
Right. It's hard to prove. But now the scientific community is the opposite. Yeah. Everything is just a matter of synapses, of firing neurons. Even though they themselves know that's not really possible to explain certain things in human behavior. That's right. It's true. So they have. But so today's even worse. Today's even worse. What the Rambam is talking about. The problem is even greater. But
so how do you? I mean, isn't that a good argument though? That if you assume the least until you have reason to assume otherwise. So if I can assume to explain something in a physical way, or I have a track record that things which I can't as of yet explain in a physical way, I will one day be able to explain in a physical way. Why would I ever stop and posit a totally different kind of existence? Not just the particular one of which, but the class of which I don't even have evidence for existing. If I can just stick to the physical, like why would I ever make that jump? How do I get there?
Oh, you mean the proof for non-physical existences?
Yeah, I mean, like, the very beginning. Like, why? I mean, it seems like that on the surface. The argument needs to be addressed. They're saying that we can...
I didn't mean to drag us into the modern arguments. But let's just stop for a minute with the Rambam's position. Now, what is it... What he's talking about in a time where people could believe in these things. It would make sense. But why are people... He's talking about foolish people. So now, what's the idea over there? That I think it's similar, like we said once. I don't remember where it was. But Ram had what we did somewhere in the Ram where he talks about the Euclidean geometry. Remember that? And he says that there are certain things that the imagination cannot grasp, but the mind knows to be true. Remember that?
Is that in the Moor?
I can't remember what it was.
Yeah.
Right?
Like
the parabola. He says, I can show you an equation, a mathematical equation, that would mean that two lines are approaching each other forever and never touching. Right? He says, the imagination can't contain such an idea.
Right.
It can keep following those two lines closer. But it can't imagine that infinite process of getting closer and never touching, right? Says, but infinite itself is a problem for the imagination. But the mind knows that that the reality is that such a thing is possible. So.
Why does the mind know that here?
Oh, I'm saying by a mathematical equation.
Why does the mind know that by non-physical?
Oh, see, he's really saying that people just don't accept the non-physical existences. Why? Because they think with their imagination. So most people, he calls them fools. He says, what's a fool? As a fool, it means everything has to fit in to a certain, like David was, somebody was saying, that the chacham to the chacham, that what's real is the conclusions of his thoughts, the conclusions of his mind. That's what he considers real. That's what he considers to exist. But most people just go experientially. Like you were saying also, go experientially, and what they consider thinking is imagining experiences. You know what I'm saying? That was like, not, Really, everything is based on experience. What's imagination? Imagination is you can access your database of experiences and images, and you can combine them in such a way as to create new things that you've never actually experienced or seen. Right? But it's still all based on the experience, on the experiential world. And that's what they consider like being a creative thinking. You understand? But not ideas, not conclusions based on logic. If that's what a fool is. I mean, a fool is a person who is. He doesn't see things based on the logic. He sees things based on experience, really. So. That's the conversation. That's a good conversation to have. Not right this minute, though. Can't mean that. He's saying that's the extent of what exists. That's the extent of what exists. So that's why he's saying that things that are really physical, they consider to be true existences, and things that are not physical means that the imagination cannot contain it. The imagination can't grasp it. It has no access. The imagination has no access to a non-physical existence. Because if you can try to imagine it, you have to ascribe some physical quality to it. Right? Every time you try to imagine, if you try to make the thing real by imagining it, now with most people, it make it real by they can make a thing real that they don't have in front of them through imagination. Right? But if it's a non-physical existence, they really can't do that. So then unless you're convinced of logical conclusions, and that logical conclusions prove what's true and what's not true, you're not going to be able to accept a non-physical existence. Yeah.
So let's say, for example, a child who doesn't have fully developed logical faculties, right?
There's
so
no way for them to understand something like that.
Right. Isn't that a problem if they're not able to understand God or anything about those kind of concepts?
They're not capable. They're just not capable. They're just not capable of it. Right. The problem is, how do you teach them? You mean, how do you teach them?
Wouldn't it be a better system to a being that could, I mean, of course, theoretically, have a being that could, from the onset, start to understand these ideas? What's beneficial about the fact that they can't understand them for a period of time, and then only then
they're
able to have access?
I don't know.
Isn't that seem kind of backwards?
Wouldn't it be better to just be born with every information in the world?
You were, by the way, but then the mama pushed you.
Oh, yeah. Right. This is for.
Right before you were born.
Right before you were born. Yeah. I didn't say it either.
I cried. Cried hard.
I don't know. That's a hard kind of analysis to go through. A lot of consequences that would come about if we were born fully. Yeah.
Would you think just the opposite? I mean, somebody can imagine something, right?
Right.
So, like, for instance, I can imagine, like, me flying, even though I know it can't physically exist. Right? I wouldn't attribute physical existence such a concept.
Right.
Right? So you can imagine non-physical ideas, things that can happen.
No, that's based on a physical idea.
No, you can imagine what? I'm not saying that anything they can imagine they think is true. That happened to be a group. That happened to be a group that Ram talks about. That they believe anything they can imagine has to exist. I'm saying the other way. I'm saying that even if I tell you something exists, unless you can have an image of it in your mind, it's not true to you. It's not true to you.
I'm saying, so you can have an image of things that are not true to you.
Because believing in something means what? Believing in something means having the idea in some form and considering it to be true. Let me just finish the thought. So if it's a non-physical thing, so in what sense can they have that idea? You know what I'm saying? In what sense do you have an idea of a non-physical existence? Only if you can understand why it exists.
You understand why it exists?
In other words, the idea of believing in something, right? How do you believe in something? It means the mind has to have a concept of it, right? The mind has to grasp it and have a certain attitude towards it, right? Like the mind can grasp the unicorn, but doesn't believe in it, right? But and belief is like Sajigon says, Amuna is that when is the conviction that the idea that you have in your mind has an existence outside of your mind, has an external reality, right? That's Amuna, okay? But okay, so I can say to you, I can come from another place, and I can say I saw such and such a thing. I can describe it to you, and my description will paint some sort of an image in your mind, and then you can have that image and you can believe it to be true, right?
Or even if you don't believe it, like the unicorn, you're still building it off of other notions that
right.
you have, other objects.
But if I tell you a non-physical existence, right?
So even if you can imagine it, you don't think it has an external reality.
One second. So you can't imagine it.
No.
I'm disagreeing with you. You cannot imagine it.
I don't know why it's true.
Because it's non-physical.
So what?
So you can't base it off of anything else.
I'm saying there's so many non-physical things.
Like what?
Like a unicorn.
No. Time out. That's a very important point. I mean to say that the description is it's a description of a non-physical thing.
I can imagine gravity.
No. I will bet you, if you imagine gravity, you can see like little waves or something like...
I'm not seeing anything. I imagine like,
But then you're not imagining gravity.
Imagine the concept of gravity?
I don't know. You're imagining objects attracting.
You're logically deducing
right?
the quality.
You're imagining objects moving towards each other, and you're saying, oh, that proves there's gravity. That was a good experiment. Let's try that one again. Look at that, 32 feet per second squared. Must be no atmosphere here.
Is that something like the parabola?
It's really like the parabola.
Right, so there the mind is, you're not, the imagination is not working there, because you're saying you can't, imagination can't put that together.
Cannot put it together.
But the mind is, I don't know if depicting is the right word, the mind is...
So then the mind can't have any belief in the thing.
If you can't,
right?
Right now you're describing
the fool, right? The only way the mind can have a belief in something is if it has an idea of the thing, and then has a conviction about it, right?
I mean, this is outside of their scope of belief.
But this is outside of their scope of belief because it's the outside of this of the mind's grasp.
You can't paint a picture of it in your head.
You can't paint the picture of it in your head. And they're not on the level to have a to, and they're not on the level to understand why it has to exist.
Is that what it means? Is that what imagination means? Imagination means you have a picture. Was it imagining like a concept exists?
I don't know if I just told you there was
a law that existed, and I can imagine such a thing happening. Now, do I know that it exists? It's not knowledge.
You mean like if you could fully describe to me the law.
The law.
Right, the law. If I could show you, if I could say to you, here's this equation, right? This equation. I think this equation is true, right? So if I'm a mathematician and I know what this equation means... That's what I'm saying. Only if I'm a mathematician would I be able to imagine this law.
Is that imagining? That's knowledge already.
Yeah, it's not imagining.
Imagining.
Correct. You're right.
Imagination
right.
Is
that's what I'm senses. Saying. That's what I'm trying to say.
You think imagination is picture?
Yeah.
No, that's the thing is imagining a concept.
I don't think so. No.
Okay, fine. I just don't know about that.
Well, like people say, imagine peace on earth. So yeah, you have to have a little picture in your head of everybody happy and smiling.
It has to be a concept of peace on earth.
No. When I say close your eyes and imagine peace on earth. What are you going to imagine? What are you going to...
Bunch of hippies.
No. but I can just imagine a concept.
A concept?
You might not be able to imagine.
But
you're a very, very special person.
But peace on earth. Let's say I say imagine peace. Imagine peace. Imagine equality. Imagine peace. Imagine equality. Imagine fairness. Imagine justice. Can you imagine these things?
Notions? I think so.
You can have an idea of it, but you can't technically. That's the intellect. That has to be the intellect working. I think those things, they have to be the intellect working, not the imagination working.
Is that true based on like a definition of intellect you have in your mind? Or is that true based
I happen to be going with the Rambam's definition of imagination.
Which is what?
Which is...
Are you getting it from here or are you getting it from somewhere else?
From somewhere else.
Okay, you want to tell me what that is?
Yeah, he has it. I mean, he has it a few places, but I think the place where I'm saying in the introduction to Shemar Prakim, he says that that's one of the faculties of the mind. To take the old sensory perceptions and combine them. And that's where dreams, it's like dreams and imagination are the same thing. Right? But the Rambam doesn't say anything about imagination over here. I'm just using that idea to explain that if a person doesn't see a reality of an idea, right, he doesn't have access to that, he doesn't have ideas, concepts, so then he's not going to be able... So if a person doesn't have ideas and concepts, he's not going to be able to imagine, he's not going to be able to have a belief in a non-physical thing. Because he doesn't have a concept of it, and he doesn't have an imagination of it. But, you see, let me give you an example. Like God, right? See, that's what Ram says later. It's possible for a person to say, I believe there has to be a creator. Right? That's a concept, though. That's a concept.
Can you imagine God?
But you can't imagine God, right?
If it's a false imagination,
you can create.
Well, then
false
you're not imagining God.
But it's not God.
Right?
It's your projection.
You hear what I'm saying, though? In other words, that's a good example of the sex. See, there is a level where the person can say, "I see there has to be a creator," right? And I see that. That I believe. Now, and I believe in that. So that's not an imagination, right? That's a concept, and he can attach a belief to that concept. But apparently, malachim. It's an interesting thing that malachim, a person has a harder time with understanding their existences than with God, right? Mm-hmm. Because I guess you see the necessity of God. Right, you see there's a concept of the necessity of God. But the necessity of malachim, you don't relate to malachim as simply a necessary force. You relate to God as a necessary existence. Because since we're all here, and the universe is here, there had to be a source.
It answers a question that the mind has.
Right? But the mind of a regular, most people don't see a necessity of an angel, of a malach. So then if I tell you there are malachim, you're not going to have the concept, which would be why there should be malachim, right? What's the cause? What's their concept? You're just going to have some idea of little helpers running around.
That's an imagination.
And that's going to have to be an imagination.
How can you imagine malachim? I mean, the Rambam is positive that you could imagine malachim.
No.
So how can you believe
in malachim? Oh, the people.
Yeah.
They're making a mistake.
Oh, I don't think there's any trouble imagining
you could go ahead and imagine malachim.
Right, just like you could go ahead and imagine
falsely,
God.
You could imagine them. Now they have a false idea.
He doesn't say that.
I didn't say it, the wrong one
did. He said he wouldn't care. You mean he said he wouldn't care?
He wouldn't care. So I'm saying, obviously he's saying that it wouldn't be a false notion.
No, apparently that's a very interesting thing. I mean,
it's not clear.
Apparently, around molds, that's not clear. We'll go through that chapter. I just alluded to that paragraph. He goes through it in depth. He goes through it in depth. He really calls. He really says they're wrong, but he says it's not something you should make a big stink about.
Kind of like, you know, he says the same thing about Shekhinah. Like if people think that
right,
that
if people
like
believe that Shekhinah is a light, which a lot of Gedolim did. Jimmy and Sadduqim has, right?
Yeah.
He has a theory. That's what he holds. So there's nothing wrong with that.
Okay, so this is the thing that the people could have an idea of Malachim being physical.
I'm trying to explain the question that we left over last week. How is it a person, that you can have a person, these Rambam says people have a hard time believing in non-physical, but yet they can believe God is not physical, right? And still, but yet they can, for some reason they can believe God is not physical and still have trouble believing Malachim are not physical, right? Because how does that work out? That people are against believing in non-physical. They believe Malachim are physical, but for some reason they're able to draw the line and say God is not physical, right? That was the question we were dealing with, that we raised at the end of the last time. That if they really can't believe in a non-physical existence being true, so then how can they believe in God? The Rambam says they can believe in God. First group, he says, is hopeless. But he does say there's a group that has this problem but is able somehow to resolve it by God. So why can't they just extend it to Malachim too? Right? So that's what I'm saying. What I'm saying is, it's based on the idea of what belief is. Belief is the concept in your mind, and then what? And then conviction. So how do you have a concept in your mind of a non-physical thing? It's only an idea that you can have in your mind. So God, people are able to say, the idea of God I accept. You understand? The idea of a creator I accept. And then they stop thinking about it. Right? And then you stop thinking about it. You don't try to imagine it. You understand? So as long as I have that idea, as long as the person comes to the idea of a creator, right, that is, then he can say, I believe there's a creator that's not like anything in this world. Created the whole world and is not like this world. And I'm not going to say anything about it. I'm not going to say anything about that creator, but I believe that created the creator to exist. That's the end of the story. Now, someone says, by the way, you know that there are good angels and bad angels? He would say, really? Okay, let me think about that. And then he would come to the conclusion, he would immediately have an idea in his mind, an image would form in his mind of those malachim, and then he would believe in that imaginative idea that he just formed. Because by God, he sees a concept that points to God. But you just tell him there are malachim, he doesn't see any concept that points to malachim. So all he's going to have in his mind is an imagination of a malach. And that's what he's going to believe in.
The idea of seeing a concept run contrary to their whole view of how to think.
Yeah, but apparently that one thing is, since it's that one thing, a creator, is a concept that even an unsophisticated person feels is right. People feel it's true. They feel that makes sense. But why should there have to be malachim? That's a separate. That's not something that's clear. That's why the Rambam stresses that it's things that they prove with mofsim. Right? Proofs. Yeah. What's that?
Mofsim's miracle.
Yeah. Sometimes it seems like it, but
no, the word means miracle.
No. But no, I was saying sometimes you have to get to the proof, say that. Yeah. That I think is what the Rambam is saying. So what does he mean though? But what is he saying? He's saying that in reality it's not true. In reality, by the way, there's another thing that is not. I don't think it's the same thing. Maybe it's related. But like for instance, radiation, right? It's an often used example. Like radiation, when they discovered radiation, so people didn't believe that necessarily it was harmful, because it doesn't feel like anything was happening, right? It didn't feel like anything was happening. People were just exposed to radiation, and it felt harmless because you don't feel anything, right? And then you tell them you're killing yourself. Nah, that's not possible, right? And I mean, it happens with a lot of things.
Cyanide is probably the same, by the way.
Cyanide?
You probably don't feel it right away.
Right, but no one says, I'm going to take this cap.
But at least you feel something. At least there's a thing that I can say I'm eating. You know? There's nothing that you feel. It's invisible. The whole thing's invisible. I remember I was telling my cousin was at over a long time ago, and I said, don't stand in front of the microwave. There are dangerous things coming out of it. They thought I was joking, like I was trying to play a trick on them, that there are monsters going to get them. You know? Because what do you mean danger? I don't see it. What could that be? So what is that phenomenon?
And also, why don't they have that problem by believing like in superstitious things like in horror or something? Other non... I know that's of a different nature, I'm saying, but there they have, you know...
But nowadays, people are very conscious of radiation. Right? See, those things are subject to change.
I don't know how much
those things are subject to change.
I don't know how much of that is a recognition.
What, the cell phones?
I don't know how much of that is a recognition as opposed to a stigma.
Not yet.
I think that might just be more of a social... I don't know if that's necessarily...
No, I think people are very aware that radiation is dangerous.
Yeah.
People are very aware that radiation is dangerous. Well, maybe not. Maybe
right,
just in the...
So, for example,
maybe just
like
the people I'm around. But, just people I know. But, but what's that? See, that's a different... I don't think that's the same thing like this. I think it's a different thing.
Well, that's science.
I mean, you don't think about radiation is the same thing as...
I don't think it's that they don't believe in the existence of the radiation.
Mm-hmm. So they don't believe it all.
Right? It's that people don't think that... People don't think... That there's a I don't know, I'm trying to think.
Isn't that more the whole like it's never gonna happen to me kind of a thing? You know, like I can do things that are dangerous because I'm never gonna get hurt. I'm invincible.
See, I think like germs, right? When Pasteur first came out with the thing about the microbes killing people, they didn't believe him. They thought he was crazy. Little invisible things are gonna kill me. That's a story. I don't know if it's true or not. You know the story? Where he came and he had the vial, he said, this little thing will kill, and the guy said, that's baloney, and he drank it. And nothing happened to him, because that's how he discovered the pasteurization, because he didn't realize he had it exposed to heat before he came. So he realized that the heat will kill so he gave him another one. No, take this one! It'll really kill you. Came back a week later. But nowadays everybody's very conscious about it. So how does that? So in other words, these things can change. Those things can change. How do those things change? Why? What's the problem? And how do those things change?
I mean,
go ahead.
You mean to say that like are the people really viewing it as differently, or is it just the fact that
it's now an accepted danger, like
that it's promoted in a certain way? You know.
I mean,
everybody's telling you to believe in it now.
Right. Yeah. It's like sunshine.
Germs.
Right.
People are not putting
listen to what.
See, I'll tell you what I think. What I think is like this. I think that people believe in cause and effect.
Right.
Okay. People are firm believers in cause and effect. They don't never accepted David Hume's point of view. Right. And the only thing is we're used to physical cause and effect. That's the type of cause and effect that we believe in, because that's the type of cause and effect that we see, and that we know, and
physical,
we experience. I mean to say, yeah, right. I mean to say, right. So you tell me that there are these electromagnetic rays, right, there are these X-rays that are going through your body and could be radicalizing a cell or something, right? Yeah, that's true, that's cause and effect. But it's not a cause and effect that my senses perceive. So I don't see it, and I don't feel it, and I don't believe in that. That type of cause and effect is not the ingrained cause and effect that I'm used to making determinations on.
But you still use your microwave.
Right? Or germs. But once the world starts saying don't stand in front of an X-ray machine too long, that itself substitutes as a cause and effect. Mm-hmm. That becomes a new cause and effect. You understand what I'm saying? If you shake someone's hand who has a cold, that's the cause and effect. Mm-hmm. That contact. Yeah. Standing in front of an X-ray machine, that the mind has to latch on to a cause and effect in the mind.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Right.
So So there's a certain point.
You have to translate it into those terms.
You have to translate it into those terms. Or you can imagine the rays going through your body and destroying cells. You have to be able to bring it. So after a long time where people get very used to the idea, they start formulating cause and effect ideas in their head. But when it's a brand new thing, it doesn't register to the mind, to the cause and effect template.
If the thing they formulate it into will, let's say, most of the time be true, but sometimes not, they'll still relate to it as being a harm, even though in that case there's just nothing wrong with it.
That's like with smoking. How do they try to stop people from smoking? They try to show them the effect, right? They show them these gruesome pictures. Like, right now, you should see the effect. And you should associate, they're trying to do that, associating in the mind the act of smoking to these horrible things. Because they know people need, like, an immediate cause and effect kind of thing. That's what they're trying to do, right? Don't tell a guy, don't smoke, because in 30 years you might get cancer. Show him a horrible picture right now. To tie it together in his mind, this action with this harm. You know, it's a certain type of a reprogramming. Yeah. But it comes down to the intellect again. That it's not an intellectual cause and effect of the person. It's not an intellectual thing of cause and effect. People have to get down to a very tactile permanent effect. Yeah.
Okay. People think about it. I mean, people, unless you are aware of these tiny little microbes.
Yeah, so they imagine it. They imagine in their mind these little things all over their hands.
Right.
Going in. I mean, they have to.
That's sort of what's going on.
But if I would just tell you the idea, when Pasteur would tell you the idea, and you didn't, and you're not able to grasp an image in your mind, it seems crazy. If you don't have an idea in your mind of how these things are going in and what they're doing once they get there, they just tell you that if you do this, you know, it's going to happen.
People don't understand the concepts, correct.
If they don't understand the concepts and they haven't formed an imaginative type of idea, then it's nothing to them.
They're not understanding.